Major funding for On Point is provided by Liberty Mutual for all your auto, home, life, and business insurance needs. Liberty Mutual. Responsibility. What's your policy?
From WBUR Boston, I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. Kidneys wear out, go wrong, fail, get ruined. Nearly 90,000 Americans need a new one. There aren't enough to go around, not by a long shot. So who should be first in line for which kidneys? A new approach would give more preference to the young. Is that just logical? This hour on Point, we're looking at life, death, and kidney transplants. You can join the conversation. What's fair here? What's right? What makes sense? You can comment at our website, onpointradio.org, where many do. It's lively there. Or on Twitter and Facebook at On Point Radio. Joining me first today from Washington is Rob Stein, health reporter for The Washington Post. He broke the story of the new initiative and debate last week. Rob Stein, thank you very much for joining us.
Hi, Tom. Nice to be here.
Give us the numbers first, if you'd be good enough, Rob. How many people are waiting for kidneys? How many get them each year? What kind of sources?
Yeah, right now there are at least 87,000 people in the United States waiting for kidneys. And in any given year, you can only expect to get about 17,000 kidneys available for transplants. So you can see the gap is quite large between the number of people waiting and the number of organs that are available.
Now, that's 17,000. Is that from organ donors who have died, or is that including live donors? You know, you hear about family members giving a kidney to a loved one or a friend?
Yeah, that's about the total number of organs that become available. Most people do not get organs in time, or there are at least 4,000 deaths that occur each year from people who do not get organs in time, kidneys in time.
So on that waiting list of 87,000 plus, maybe 4,000 plus will die in this year because they won't get one.
Right, that's right. And that's a problem. You know, they've done a lot to try to increase the number of organs that are available, but still there's a huge shortfall in the number that people can get available for transplants right now.
Now, overall, how does the system work? Who decides who gets what when it comes to kidneys?
Yes, right now the system, it's organized by this group called UNOS, which is a network for organ sharing, which is contracted by the government to run the nation's transplant system. And the kidney system right now is, the way it works is whoever's been on the list the longest tends to get the highest priority for the next kidney. It's not only waiting list time, but that's a major factor. And that's basically been the case, you know, out of a sense of fairness that, you know, it's your turn, you're up next, it's your chance to get a kidney.
So that's kind of essentially first come, first served.
Exactly. Now, what they're considering doing is changing that system and making the system for kidneys more like the system for other types of organs, which is to try to match the organs more closely to the recipients. So the idea is that, you know, right now you could get an 80-year-old who's on the waiting list who could end up getting a kidney from a 20-year-old, when that kidney could provide more years of life to somebody who is younger or healthier, somebody in their 20s or 30s. So the idea is to basically maximize the number of years we're getting from each kidney.
So it's not that the younger person would get the kidney sooner necessarily, but that they would be matching with younger, that is, I guess, healthier kidneys with a longer life ahead of them?
Under this system, the younger, healthier people would get a higher priority, and it would be at an advantage. So they would potentially get the kidney sooner, or at least get a better kidney sooner, would become available. Now, you know, nobody would be blocked out of the system. You know, older people and people with health problems still would be in line to get kidneys, but it would just be the idea is to match them up better so that you don't have people who die with their functioning kidneys, and you don't have younger people who get kidneys that wear out and they end up back on the waiting list again in a few years.
So I guess implicit in this is that not all transplant kidneys are equal. You could get a kidney from an older donor that just doesn't have as much, it's just older. It's just more worn out, I guess.
That's right. That if you get a kidney from somebody who's older or somebody who's had health problems, chances are that kidney's just not going to last as long as if you got a kidney from somebody who's younger or healthier.
Rob, take us into the details of this, because this is really interesting. Exactly how would the system work if they go to the model you're describing?
Yeah, the ideas are rather broad, and they haven't worked out all the details by any means. But what they're thinking about doing is taking the top 20% of kidneys, the top 20%, the ones that are expected to last the longest, and matching them up much more closely to people based on their age and their health status and how long they would be expected to get life out of that kidney. And that would be for the top 20% of organs. And then for the remaining 80% of organs, it would remain largely based on waiting time, although even in that case, there would be some preference given to people who are within 15 years, either older or younger, of the donor.
When will this be decided, and how does it get turned into new policy, if that's what it's going to be?
Yeah, it's as I say, the process is in very early stages. There's been a committee that has been studying this and getting public input and gathering information for several years now, and they're just started last week circulating a document that sort of lays out the broad concepts that they're considering, and that's going to be open now for public comment until April 1st. They want to see what kind of response they get to this, because obviously this is a very sensitive subject with a lot of ethical concerns that have to be taken into consideration, and then after they gather all the public comment, they're going to go back and they're going to revise or reconsider the proposal, and it'll be circulated again. And so we're talking about at least a year, more than a year, before this would go to the UNOS board, which would then decide what to do.
Rob, is it proving controversial since you broke the story of this? What's the range of reaction that you heard to it in your reporting?
Yeah, I got a real range of reactions. There were a lot of, you know, bioethicists and transplant surgeons and representatives for patients who were very much in favor of this. They thought it made sense. It was the right thing to do. But there certainly are some concerns about it. There are concerns that, you know, that it would be a form of age discrimination, for example, that basically you would be putting older people or people who aren't as healthy at a disadvantage over, you know, compared to younger people. And that certainly is a concern, especially at a time when our population is aging, and more and more people in their 50s and 60s and older could use kidneys. And, you know, there's a concern that those people, you know, would not be able to get the best kidneys available.
Rob Stein, we're going to plunge on in here, but thanks to you for bringing this story to light, and thanks for sharing some of the details with us today.
My pleasure. Thanks for having me.
Rob Stein with The Washington Post. We'll hear in a moment from the chair of the Kidney Transplantation Committee. But joining me first from Chicago is Lainey Friedman-Ross, a pediatrician, associate director at the McLean Center for Clinical Medical Ethics at the University of Chicago. She's on the Ethics Committee of the United Network for Organ Sharing. She's speaking today from her personal perspective. Dr. Ross, thank you very much for being with us.
Hi, Tom. Thanks for inviting me.
So Rob Stein spoke with you when this news first broke, and he quotes you saying it's age discrimination. Why?
So first of all, I think what we have to realize is that the new system with the age pairing assumes that we really can tell how long an individual will survive. And the fact is that we're probably right about two-thirds of the time that a younger donor, a younger recipient will actually live longer. But the real problem is that the way it's designed, it's really going to make it that people over the age of 50 or 55 really will not be able to get a kidney in any reasonable period of time.
Now, why is that? It's only 20% of the best kidneys, Rob said, that would be set aside. That would leave 80%. That sounds like enough to get to people who are, 50 is not ancient.
Correct. Not at all ancient. In fact, the concept of elderly has been redefined by UNOS to really be talking about everyone over the age of 50. And they are the largest growing group who actually needs a kidney transplant. So one of the issues is this age matching, so that if a 40-year-old donor becomes available, it will be given to somebody who's between the ages of 25 and 55.
Okay.
And so therefore, when you think about who dies, who has a kidney that is actually able to be donated, many of our donors are going to be younger, healthier people who died in accidents or from trauma or things of that sort. And so there's going to be very few kidneys that are going to be available to people over the age of 60.
Does the age matching then, Dr. Ross, go beyond that 20% of best kidneys? The other 80% are also, they're trying to age match donor and recipient roughly?
Correct. The top 20% are actually just given to the healthiest recipients, those who are expected to live the longest. And that judgment's probably right two-thirds of the time. But the other 80% are going to be included with age matching.
What does that mean then for a 52-year-old who has failing kidneys and what they're facing?
So that's the impressive part of the problem with this whole new system. What's going to happen to the 52-year-old to 65-year-old if they realize that their wait is going to be long, if not interminable, is that they're going to have to seek out a living donor. And I think it's really important for us to realize that actually last year, about 17,000 kidneys, 40% come from living donors.
That's a lot.
And UNOS has no control over those 40%.
Okay.
So right now, those living donors donate to everyone on the list. Back in 2004, we started a new policy, or UNOS started a new policy, that gave the best kidneys to children. I'm a pediatrician. Mm-hmm. I thought it was great. I still think it's great. But one of the questions I asked back then is, what are the unintended consequences? And one of the unintended consequences is that when parents realized their children were going to get the best deceased donor kidneys, they stopped donating. So the number of
why
parents
bother?
Who started mm-hmm. donating, no, not why bother, save the kidney so when the child needs a second kidney, I have one available.
Oh, okay.
If we start giving the best kidneys to those people who are all under the age of 35, living donors are going to say, I'm holding off. And so what's going to happen is one of two events. Either one, the number of living donors will go down, and that will actually make the wait list even longer. Or the second is it's the 50 to 65 plus who's going to say, I can't get a kidney from the deceased donor wait list. And they may be getting their 40-year-old child or their 20-year-old grandchild. And if you want to make the longest years after a kidney transplant, the best ones are the living donor kidneys.
But then it turns around, they're looking for those from grandchildren. That hardly seems right somehow. But
Dr.
Ross, hold on. This is complicated and really interesting. We've got to take a short break here, but we will be right back. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking this hour about organ transplants, kidney transplants in particular, who gets what and why. A new approach would advantage the young over the old. We've been talking with Dr. Lainey Friedman Ross in Chicago, pediatrician there. She's also on the Ethics Committee for the United Network for Organ Sharing, talking today from her personal experience and perspective. With us right now as well from Columbus, Ohio, is Dr. Kenneth Andreoni. He's a transplant surgeon, professor of surgery at Ohio State University, and chair of the Kidney Transplantation Committee, the group which is reviewing kidney organ procurement, distribution, and allocation for this network of organ sharing. You can see, the full document of suggestions that are out there now, and submit your comments through our website, onpointradio.org. Dr. Andreoni, thank you very much for being with us today.
Well, thank you, Tom. It's a pleasure to be here, and I'm very much thankful to you for allowing us to help educate the public on this important document.
We've got a policy of 25 years on the table here. That sounds like enough time that some reconsideration could very well be reasonable. With this idea, what are you trying to get at with this program that we're hearing about today?
Well, there are several issues, and actually I'm very happy Dr. Ross just spoke to you because she has very much vocalized a lot of the concerns and what some of us believe are misunderstandings of what's in the concept document. The current policy that we have today, as you mentioned, is extremely old, and it was actually based originally on medical necessity. That was tissue matching. And as that has become less necessary over the decades with better medications, we now are in a system where it's basically waiting for whichever kidney is next.
You mean you can give drugs to a recipient so that you don't have organ rejection very commonly in kidneys? So it doesn't really matter if they match naturally or not.
It is a little better if you match more, but it's decided that the outcomes are reasonably close with the new medications.
Yep.
So really, the system has changed from one which was strongly driven by medical matching into one that now is pretty much time.
Everybody's hypothetically in the same pool.
Correct.
Okay.
Now, the current system, again, as people are alluding to, has some obvious issues which most of us in transplantation see, and even those in the public and donor families. And that's more or less the edges of the allocation system when there's a big mismatch between the potential function of the gifted kidney and the potential survival of the person after they receive that transplant.
Mm-hmm.
That is pretty much a consensus around the board from our over 6.5 years of trying to come up with ideas that the stakeholders, that is the public, donor families, transplant recipients, and professionals, think are most important. That led us to the first issue of the concept of younger adults who have many, many years to live will almost always need another transplant, and the best chance for them to live as long as possible with their first kidney transplant is to really have one of the better transplants. That would be one with the most horsepower. As Dr. Ross mentioned, we already do that for the children. And the time period between being 17 years and 11 months and 18 years and one day is obviously an artificial one. These people are biologically the same, and they need something that's going to try to get them through school, through education. In regards to a young woman, even have the chance of having a family and getting pregnant.
Could you explain, really, issues? You do this as a transplant surgeon. The difference in quality, I don't know, even appearance between a young, healthy kidney and an older kidney that may be donated, how big is the difference? How much do kidneys wear or wear out?
Excellent question. And in our system today, we do not do a very good job of letting either patients or transplant professionals understand this, especially with the hectic nature of a deceased donor being available, decisions that have to be made quickly.
Mm-hmm.
In the current system, there's about 17% of the kidneys, which we call extended criteria donor kidneys. And those are the ones that statistically won't last as long as the other 83%, which we call standard kidneys.
Okay.
Now, as you can imagine, within those 83%, there's a long range, a continuum of where things are. What we're trying to look at in this a new system that may come up in the future, again, we don't have a proposal right now, is a more granular or a more continuous measurement of how we estimate a kidney should function. And we're calling that the Kidney Donor Profile Index. And that will be a continuous scale, either 1 to 100 or 0 to 1, whichever.
On the quality of that donated organ.
You're correct. Mm-hmm. So it'll give both patients and transplant professionals a better idea of their relative quality so they can make more informed choices.
That
a big push of what we want is better education.
But what you're aiming to do with that then is around this matching idea. Dr. Ross looks at this and says fairly flatly that under this system, if you're over 50 or 55 and you need a kidney transplant, you won't get one.
And that is actually factually incorrect. We have in the concept document, and one thing I would ask of anyone who's interested is before you make up your mind, please read the actual document. There is a figure, which I believe is 16, which shows the distribution in age of donors. And though Dr. Ross is correct, where decades ago, the majority of our donors were younger adults or even adolescents, currently a large number, and in fact, an increasing majority, is now over age 40. So to take the example of a 60-year-old who can get an organ offer in potentially the new document from 45 to 75, that person still has an option of looking at more than half of the donated kidneys in the United States today.
Are you talking about live donors or the dead donors?
I am talking only about deceased donors here.
Dr. Ross sees, though, the dynamic emerging here where older people in need of a kidney would be turning to their children or grandchildren for that as an unintended consequence. What do you say?
Well, 2 points on that. Number one, as the donor age increases in this country, just as the age of all of us increase, which is excellent, there will likely be an increasing number of deceased donors available to those who are older because the ages will be similar. In addition, there already is live donation being done across generations that is still done today, and a 50-year-old who gets a live donor has the potential of living decades.
Dr. Ross, you're a pediatrician looking at this, and you're an ethicist. Is it ethical for an older person to ask a living younger person to donate a kidney?
What families can do is very different than what anybody else can do. And so, yes, family members can ask. I hear your hesitation, and that is one of the things I agree with, that I would prefer that older people got deceased donor kidneys because no matter how good your deceased donor kidney is, the living kidney donors are better. So the ideal recipient of a living donor is the 25, 30, 35-year-old, the ones who are now going to be advantaged by this deceased donor method, and so therefore won't be looking for the living donors.
But at some level, this is beyond Dear Abby. I mean, of course, if you're family, you can ask, but should a grandparent ask for a grandchild, one of a grandchild's two kidneys? I mean, is that morally right?
I'm not here to judge how families make decisions. I think we have to realize that many young children, for example, are being raised by grandparents and not by their parents. And so they may feel that same parent-child relationship that the 45-year-old parent asking a 20 or 25-year-old child to donate a kidney. It would be great if we had enough kidneys that we didn't have to ask any living donors. That system, unfortunately, we don't have.
Dr. Andreoni, are you saying with this new concept, or would this be suggesting that a vibrant young kidney is in some sense wasted on a 50, 60-plus person who needs one?
I would never use the word wasted on any person. The question we have with the scarce number of organs available is that the organs can help almost every patient who receives one live longer. And again, the question is, how can we best align the potential function of the kidney with the potential need of the patient? If the patient needs a kidney that's going to work about 5 to 7 years because that's their expected survival, then it would be best to align that ability of the kidney with that patient.
But if they're 50 right years old, they might live another half century possibly? And so then, you know, how do you judge? Is someone living from 50 to 100 against someone living from 20 to 100 or 20 to 80?
Well, again, as Dr. Ross said, we are not in the pure prediction game. However, if you look at large numbers, people do get a very educated idea mm-hmm. of about how long someone's going to live. I mean, that's why life insurance companies
yep.
are in business.
Sure.
So if we look at an average person between 25 and 29, on hemodialysis these days, they live about 13 years.
Okay.
If they received a transplant, they would live on average about 34 years.
Okay.
Which is an increase of 21 more years from the transplant. If we look at someone who's in a bit of an older group, 60 to 64, on average, they'll live about 5 years on dialysis
mm-hmm.
and about 12 years with a transplant. So that's an addition of 7 years of life.
Right.
Both people gain,
mm-hmm.
but one person needs basically a bit more horsepower than the other.
We've got a lot of listeners with questions here. I'd like to turn to them. Brewerstown, Tennessee. Jerry's calling. Hi, Jerry. You're on the air.
Hello, Tom.
Hi.
I've got some more things to throw in for your consideration.
Let's hear it.
I'm a volunteer firefighter, and there are several of us that are in our 50s.
Okay.
And other people that do a lot for the community. And how would you compare that to a young person who was into risky behavior like drugs or alcohol or extreme sports and such?
So we've got a virtuous citizen in his 50s who's out fighting fires and a young person who's maybe not taking the best care of their body or subjecting it to risks.
Right.
Well, Dr. Ross, let me bring that one first to you. I don't know. You're the medical ethicist here.
So first I want to say thank you from all of us to all of our firefighters all over the country. And your point is a very important one. Part of the whole UNOS process has to be one about maintaining public trust. And if the firefighters are sitting here saying, am I ever going to get a kidney, we're failing you. And this system that we currently have has its problems, but at least, you know, it's focused on fairness, that everyone gets a chance. The new system will not have that.
There's
also one other issue is geography. If this was a firefighter from New York, your wait today would be 10 years. I don't know what your wait is where you are. It's probably shorter, maybe 2 or 3 years. In other parts of the country, it can be less than a year. And one of the things this new kidney allocation system does not take into consideration is geography. If we want to increase the number of life years from kidneys, we wouldn't have some people waiting 10 years, some young people waiting 10 years or old people, while others are waiting 6 months to a year.
Why is it
so
a longer wait in
comments.
New York than in, I don't know, Tennessee or Florida, I think I've read? Why is that, though, Dr. Ross?
It's based on the number of people who have kidney failure and the number of kidneys that become available from the deceased donor list. All of the kidney modeling that we're talking about today is being done at the national level, and yet kidneys are distributed locally. There's actually no reason to maintain distribution locally except for turf wars. If we distributed on a more national basis, it would be even fairer, and yet that has not even been taken into consideration.
Jerry, let me hold that thought for 1 minute and get another call here from Mary in Lexington, Massachusetts. Mary, thank you for calling.
Thank you. Hi, Tom.
Hi. What do you think?
I'm concerned by the whole thing because I think it's just a blanket, more of the ageism that is prevalent. For some reason, it's still okay to discriminate against older people. You could not then, I mean, are they going to be taking into account perhaps that a person has a lower IQ and may not provide as much benefit to society? Are they also going to look at race and say that perhaps and in large numbers Hispanic people don't make as much money, so therefore they should not get one?
But they live longer, so maybe they should.
Yeah, I don't think it's really quite fair. How do you put value on that life?
Mary, I hear what you're saying, but let me ask you if I may, and I'll come to you, Dr. Andreoni. But Mary, mm-hmm. when you hear Dr. Andreoni say, you know, a 29, 30-year-old may live 34 more years with that top-quality kidney transplant, whereas a 60-something may live 12 more years, how do you put a value on that, Mary?
But how do you put a value on those 12 years versus the 30 years? Who says these are better years?
Dr. Andreoni, what do you say to Mary?
Well, I would like to talk about fairness, and fairness is anything we want to make it, any one of us.
It is?
Another way of looking at the fairness question is it fair for those of us in this country to have an ability to live to be a reasonable age? So a person who gets renal disease below age 30 will live maybe to age 40 if they're very lucky. And whereas a person who already is starting at a much older age has already guaranteed to live that old. So people look at the, quote, sickest. But if you really think about it, the people with the largest disease burden are the youngest. That's why the pediatric patients who Dr. Ross takes care of has even a greater ability to get a kidney transplant quicker. So what she does in transplant of young people, that is pediatrics, is the obvious extension of this.
Who gets kidney disease and why, Dr. Andreoni?
Well, anyone can get kidney disease. And there's basically two times where people get it the most. There are extremely young children who can get it from congenital problems. Mm-hmm. There are some genetic diseases that will go ahead and give you end-stage renal disease very early. There are then some urological or plumbing problems that may be more into teenage years. There are some autoimmune diseases more in the 20s and 30s. And some of these go even older. And there's also people who develop high blood pressure, hypertension, or diabetes, which tend to be much older.
And what about Jerry, the firefighter's observation? He says, you know, look, I'm out here doing good for people. You can't be sure that a 25-year-old someone, you know, they, I don't know, they may maybe not providing as much community good as Jerry. How can you take that into account?
But we do take a psychosocial evaluation of every transplant candidate for every organ into account. And what that means is, will they take their medicines? Will they do what they're told? Are they not using illicit substances? Do they have a reasonable support system so that when we give them this transplant, which does need care, they can provide that care to that gifted organ? So that is taken into account somewhat. We do not judge people on their race, on what their IQ is, unless, of course, they can't actually take their medicines. So there is a baseline level being able to care for the gifted organ, but we do not judge above that.
Gosh, you're out here in public now defending a new policy. Do you welcome that, or is this awkward? Because as you say, there are many different ideas about what fairness is. Yes?
Actually, it's great because, number one, it's not a policy, and I'm trying to correct a lot of the misunderstandings. I've had a number of emails directly to me where when I send them back the mathematical facts and ask them to read the concept document, the large majority of the responses are, oh, thank you, but why was it not in the paper this way?
You can see the whole paper via our website, onpointradio.org. Not a proposal, says Kenneth Andreoni, but a concept document. He joins us from Columbus, Ohio. Lainey Friedman Ross is with us from Chicago. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. talking this hour about organ transplants, kidney transplants in particular, who gets what and why a new approach would advantage the young over the old. It has been more or less first come, first serve. The new policy, a concept document that's being circulated right now, or at least as of the Washington Post story that put it out in public, would reserve the top 20% best kidneys for young recipients. The other 80%, a kind of age matching would go on. You would get one from somebody most likely within your age bracket or your age range. Dr. Andreoni is with us from Columbus, Ohio, a transplant surgeon there, professor of surgery at Ohio State University, and chair of the Kidney Transplantation Committee on the United Network for Organ Sharing. Lanny Friedman Ross is with us from Chicago, a pediatrician and a associate director of the McLean Center for Clinical Medical Ethics at the University of Chicago. With us right now as well from Philadelphia is Arthur Kaplan, professor and director of the Center for Bioethics at the University of Pennsylvania. Art Kaplan, welcome back to On Point. It's been a while. Thank you for joining us today.
Thanks for having me.
What do you make of the new proposal? Is this logical? Is this ageism? What do you say?
Well, remember the old policy, first come, first serve, actually has its roots somewhat in history. When transplant first appeared, it was pretty dangerous. Mm-hmm. And many people who got transplants for various reasons did not do well with them, and there was a risk of dying or shortening your life.
Okay.
Part of the way to live with that reality of a new procedure was to give it to people who were the sickest, who had the most desperate circumstances. That way you could kind of honor the do-no-harm principle.
Mm-hmm.
If you had a bad outcome, you were giving organs to people who probably would have had a bad outcome anyway. That stuck, and that is the origin of the first-come, first-served principle. It really started historically more as an ethic of experimentation or innovation around kidney transplant and, in fact, for other forms of transplant.
But it's much less dangerous now, and Dr. Andreoni is reminding us that even the tissue matching is less important now, given the drugs now.
That's the point. So now we have a procedure that's well-established. We have a lot of data on what works, what doesn't work, and I think, part of the answer to is this a good idea, is it a sound idea? Well, what does the public expect when it donates organs? Does it expect to save the most lives, save the most years of life, give everybody, relatively speaking, a kind of equal shot? I think that people donate organs when their loved ones die or when they themselves die to save lives. And I think moving more in that direction does make sense because the procedure works better, because we have some information about who's likely to do the best, who's likely not to require retransplant. I think there's some logic here.
But what do you mean? You mean to save a life or who's going to get the most years out of the transplanted organ?
Well, a combination of both. I think that we want to save the most lives we can with a scarce supply of organs, much as we would with a scarce supply of medicine or a mm-hmm. scarce supply of vaccine or anything else. We keep an eye on that. But also, we do have to take into account years of life saved. And if you push me, even what somebody can do with that life. Just saving people in permanent comas for 30 years doesn't make as much sense as letting somebody go back to school, go back to work, be a parent. So those factors do come into account. We can't always predict them well. We can't always be accurate about it. But it turns out that age is a rough, very rough, but nonetheless rough guide, at least to who's likely to get the most years of life and life saved with, if you will, the best organs.
We've got so much response to this online. Here's a comment from Sonia. She said, should people like Steve Jobs, a man in his 50s who apparently received a liver transplant, jump to the head of the transplant line because of their value to society in creating jobs, new devices, iPods, or should somebody less valuable, in quotes here, but younger, no history of cancer, should they be getting the job? She asks, how do we know? Whether what's influenced by class and wealth and occupation and other mm-hmm. measures of value and goodness, can we really?
Well, I'll take a stab at that and say the problem with Steve Jobs is he has disseminated cancer, and so some centers wouldn't even consider him as a good outcome regardless of his social worth or social contribution. What he did was he went to more than one center and had himself listed he used his resources to put more chits in the game, that is, to get evaluated and admitted in different parts of the country, thereby raising the chances that maybe a liver would become available that might match him, and he would find a surgical team willing to take him on. So he does have an advantage because of his resources, the ability to jump on a jet. Remember, he got his transplant in Tennessee, and last I looked, that's not where he lives.
Dr. Andreoni, is that open to everybody these days? We've got a lot of comment on that line as well online. People saying, you know, who should come first, the young, the old, the first in line. And John says, you forgot one group, the rich. Corey says, I bet you wealth and power play a role. Art Kaplan's describing a circumstance in Steve Jobs' case where, I mean, he played the system, but it took resources to do it the way he did it. What about wealth when it comes to these decisions, Dr. Andreoni?
Okay, well, let me quickly say that Steve Jobs obviously had a liver transplant, which is not a kidney transplant.
Fair.
The system's very different. In liver transplant, the score, which is called a MELD score, M-E-L-D, measure of end-stage liver disease, is based on an estimate of how quickly someone will die, not how long they will live afterwards.
Mm-hmm.
And again, I do not know any information about an individual, and I would not be allowed to say so if I do. But the understanding that was published was that he had the highest score in the area and received the next liver. If that is the case, then the game was played fair. We do that today. We may be doing a liver transplant this evening on someone who's been waiting only a couple of weeks because he's the sickest person.
What about the kidney world then?
I think it is now. I'm sorry to interrupt.
Yes?
He did multiply list himself.
Which is why he ended up going to Tennessee. What if I need a kidney today? Yes, Lenny?
Well, I'd also like to point out while it doesn't hold for livers because of the fact that, as Dr. Andreoni explained, that's based on who's going to die first, this whole issue of geography, one of the smartest things a transplant surgeon can tell somebody in Chicago on the kidney transplant list is to move to Florida. So geography is a huge issue, and it has not been addressed by the concept paper that Dr. Andreoni is defending.
Because there's so much more availability there. Dr. Andreoni, what about the affluence today? Let's say I'm a rich guy. I'm whatever age I am. I need a kidney. Will money help me move to the top of the line?
Okay, well, thank you. Well, two things. Dr. Ross is right in that we're not directly addressing geography in this allocation concept. We are going to be looking at geography with the distribution concepts, which we're looking into now, and actually all the UNOS committees are looking into. What we're trying to do with the concepts here are to develop a system that can be applied in any geography or any distribution system and make the best out of it. So even in our current system, we still get more functional years of life out of what we're trying to propose. We believe without going to an extreme, that is allowing everyone to still get an opportunity. And again, for those who think they won't, they really need to look at the numbers and look at the math in the document. Now, the issue of going to different places is called multiple listing. And especially the UNOS Patient Affairs Committee has strongly wanted to keep multiple listing as a concept. And in fact, every UNOS center is required to tell people that they're allowed to multiple list. So if you're in a city, you can go to multiple places. You can drive across the state lines. Obviously, it may take resources to go further than where you live, but people do have the right to multiple list.
So that is a kind of advantage if you exercise it for somebody with resources.
If you need to.
Let's get a call from Dilip in Acton, Massachusetts. Dilip, you're on the air.
Hi, Tom. I wanted to bring a libertarian perspective to this, which is I think it's the personal property of the person who owns the kidney, and it is his or her decision as to who they want to give it to. So why not have an open exchange where people can bid for the kidney, and whoever has the resources and money or whatever can get the kidney. And if the question is only to support people who are too poor to afford it, then government can probably subsidize it to some extent. But I don't see why it's anybody else's decision as to who the kidney goes to.
But what's the moral basis of bidding for it? That would make it just whoever's got the most cash would get the organ, Dilip?
Well, I don't understand how any central committee could come up with the correct moral judgment as to who should have the kidney. I think it's just a free system where whoever has the money can certainly go ahead and bid for it.
Let us take it up, Arthur Kaplan. Dr. Kaplan, you're in the bioethics business. Is this just beyond human capacity to come up with an optimal system? So just give it over to the market?
I don't think so. I actually think the system we have has been working pretty well. But let's be clear. When you are a cadaver organ donor, you absolutely could put a condition on your gift. You might say, I want it to go to black people. I want it to go to bioethicists. The difficulty comes in a system. You have to try and match blood type to some extent for certain organs, tissue type. We have geographic limits. It's difficult for the system to say on any given day, well, in fact, there is a bioethicist and he needs a kidney and yours can go to him. Keeping track of who's where and trying to match and transport becomes impossible. So there's no, it's not a plot against people's choice and liberty. We do see it in living donation. People do, in fact, give kidneys to who they choose to give kidneys. But in cadaver, it's technical, it's difficult. And I think the system we've used to distribute, well, we can certainly debate the rules. The public has input. It's not secret. It's transparent. We try to do the best we can. And the relationship to the organs that are gifted is responsible stewardship. That's what we're trying to achieve.
And can I take you back to this tilt toward the young? And just, I want to be sure I understand where you come down on it. In the end, you think it's a good idea to go for this age matching, which what I'm understanding from this conversation is would advantage the young over time. Are you for that and why?
I am, because I think you have fewer retransplants. That is, younger people don't reject and have organ failure the same way older people do. We ourselves have done some looks at that information. I think you'll get better outcomes and more lives saved and life years added to go toward that policy. It's not a judgment about whose life is worth what. It's not a judgment about who's socially useful or who merits things or even why somebody needs a transplant in terms of liability and responsibility. It's simply saying if the goal of the system justly is to try and maximize the number of people that are helped, going toward the young makes more sense with a proven treatment than just saying take the sickest or take the next person in line.
Let me get a call from David in Hazard, Kentucky. Hi, David. You're on the air.
Hi, Tom.
Hi.
I think you addressed my point when you followed up with the firefighter question, and that is how people care for themselves when they receive a kidney. I think that should determine as much as age. And I don't know, how you care for yourself is going to determine how long it lasts, I think, even with the drugs that makes more matching better.
Have you seen people taking care of themselves in different ways after on dialysis or with an organ transplant there, David?
Well, that was the thing. I know a person that was in dialysis and seen people who would not take care of themselves, wouldn't show up for dialysis, wouldn't follow the regimen or whatever criteria was laid down.
Yes.
You know, and somebody that is, even if they're older, if they're gonna do better and stand a better chance with living with a kidney, I think that should have a great bearing on it.
David, I appreciate your call. Our time is short here, but thank you for that. Dr. Andreoni, does that, would that come into play under your new concept?
Again, that comes into play today. So one of the best ways of measuring, quote, compliance, will a patient do what we're asking them to do, is to talk to the dialysis unit and say, do they show up for their treatments? Do they stay on for their given time? How is their weight fluctuation? How's their diet? So that is already done. And for patients who don't follow through, we tell them that we won't transplant them until we can see evidence that they're willing to do the right thing.
We're moving toward a time, famously, where we're going to have more older people in this country. How does that change the calculus of your consideration of to whom kidneys should go, Dr. Andreoni?
Again, that was a point I tried to make earlier. So with the aging of the population, and now more of the donors are over age 40 than under age 40. So some of the information we've been talking about getting younger people all the kidneys is mathematically not going to happen. So a 55-year-old donor will first be looked at from someone plus or minus 15 years, which is up to 70 and down to 40. If you look at anyone's wait list, that's going to be the large majority of the local wait list. So in the new system, if we get this concept document approved and we go forward with this broad age matching for most of the kidneys, the same group of people will be looking at most of the same organs. So mathematically, it's actually a smaller difference than most people are willing to acknowledge.
What would it take in terms of an increased percentage of Americans, you know, signing up to be organ donors to close this gap between supply and demand? I mean, if 5% more people made their kidneys available upon death, would that solve it, or 1% or 20? What would it take? Do you know?
I cannot give you a percentage. I can give you the numbers you quoted earlier today. We can use another 60 or 65,000 kidneys a year right now. And then obviously there's less people going on the list every year that are new. But there are many people who die from the list just waiting. So to say that everyone has an equal chance at a kidney is also not fair, in that some people die quickly while waiting.
And kidney disease, is it on the rise? And if it is, what's driving that? You said it's related to diabetes. Is that diet related?
Absolutely. Hit the nail on the head. So for the older population, many people who are having decades of hypertension, decades of type 2 diabetes, as well as simply living longer.
How is it going to be decided if you adopt this new concept or not? And when might that happen?
So we're waiting for feedback. Again, please read the concept document. Mm-hmm. Make an informed response. We'll be talking about it over the next several months. The reason it's truly not a proposal, or there are many more details to talk about. So once we have this large group of people, how we actually rank order them will be mostly likely by time on dialysis for that, quote, fairness side. That's going to, again, hopefully not do what Dr. Ross was afraid of, and that is decreased living donation. So we hope in a year or so we may be able to have something more concrete for people to go ahead, look at carefully, and respond again.
You can get to the full document through our website, onpointradio.org. Dr. Kenneth Andreoni is chair of the Kidney Transplantation Committee on that United Network of Organ Sharing work. Dr. Andreoni, thank you very much for your explanation today.
Again, thank you so much for educating the public.
Dr. Lainey Friedman-Ross in Chicago, thanks very much for your insights and time today.
Thank you for inviting me.
And Arthur Kaplan at University of Pennsylvania, thank you so much for being with us.
Thanks.
Listeners, thank you for joining us. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.